Hey, podcasters, we're in New York City today. We've got a great week of shows for you, some really, really good guests. Tomorrow, I think we have Gavin McGinnis on, do we not? Michael Rechtenwald is also going to be on with us this week. A lot of people are going to be on with us. You don't want to miss it. Today, we started with what's happening in China. There's the probably like more like our Boston Tea Party happened during our Independence Weekend in China. We go over that. Also, the cops that were kicked out of Starbucks, the latest polls that show Trump at his highest approval rating. We compare that to Donald Trump while he was not Donald Trump, but Barack Obama while he was in office. Also, a look at some of the good things, some of the things that, you know, we say, oh, geez, the price of a phone is so much. It's so high. Well, let me give you a perspective on that. At the same time, telling you why I think we don't have inflation now. While everything tells us we should, we don't, perhaps for this reason. And how good America really has it today on the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Freedom usually begins as a whisper. Freedom. It's a secret pass between patrons at a secluded bar or a private meeting, maybe in a basement. Freedom. No matter how hard the tyrants may try to stop it, no matter how many dams they throw up to try to contain it, the whispers usually become a flood. And sometimes it takes longer to break through. Sometimes it'll take millions of lives lost. But it is the same every time. Liberty and freedom win. It's like life. Life has a way of staying alive. It's an unstoppable force that knows no immovable object. Now for us, it was 243 years ago, 12 score, and 3 years ago to this month, that those whispers became a flood. A group of colonialists on the world's only superpower. They took on that superpower and won. Our forefathers proved it. Freedom refuses to recognize tyranny as an immovable object, and the world was forever changed. I can't help but see the poetic justice as more whispers become a flood, defying their own immovable object. Just 3 days before all of us were buying fireworks to celebrate our Independence Day, something was happening just off the coast of mainland China. Last week, in case you weren't paying attention, a million protesters filled the streets in Hong Kong, literally a flood of humans looking for their freedom. They stormed the government building that is the equivalent of their Congress. They smashed windows, broke down doors. And then there was a photo that was taken. I don't know if you saw it, but it should be the picture of the year. It was a British colonial flag, a symbol thrown out when Hong Kong was given back to China. But it was draped by the protesters over the chair of the head of their government. Think of that. Think of an Antifa flag over the chair of the White House. How shocking that would be. This is a colonial flag. The people of Hong Kong, with a population that is over 90% ethnic Han Chinese, which is the right kind of Chinese, I hear. They're saying to the mainland that they prefer the colonial rule over the tyranny of the Chinese government. Leftists will tell you now that communism is a remedy for colonialism. But for those living in the dark shadows of communism, they actually prefer colonial rule over what they now face. Think of that. When Hong Kong was given back to the mainland, China agreed to allow them a few freedoms that the rest of the Chinese don't ever enjoy. They're free to engage in protest against the government. They maintain a legislative body, both of which are outlawed on the mainland. But as every oppressor always does, China has been looking to reel that back in. Most recently, China attempted to make it possible to extradite the dissenters back to Beijing. That spooked everybody in Hong Kong, and the quiet whispers of freedom, the secrets told in private at clandestine meetings, became a flood of millions in the streets. So the night before we were lighting fireworks here, the police began a crackdown. More than 13 people have been arrested so far. 13 colonies, 13 arrests. China, if they eventually get their way, those 13 people will no doubt be the first of many to be extradited over to the mainland. Their crime is that they believe they should be free. As of right now, their extradition has been temporarily delayed. The local Hong Kong government is caught between the immovable object of the Chinese government, communist government, and the unstoppable force of liberty. But all we have to do is really look at history. We'll see who wins in the end. Yesterday, over 200,000 protesters gathered at a high-speed train station that links mainland China to Hong Kong. The message was just as clear as the British colonial flag hung inside of their legislative building. We had the Gadsden flag, the phrase, "Death to Tyranny." China, the message is simple. We will not be ruled. Freedom knows no immovable object. News of the protest movement has been censored in mainland China, but how long will they be able to contain their own whispers? With over 200,000 freedom lovers camped out on a bridge between Hong Kong and mainland China, how long before those whispers spread to secret meeting locations in Beijing or Shanghai? How long before that cascades to the Christian and the Muslim minorities that are tired of being rounded up and thrown up into camps? Or is there digital security, a new immovable object? We might have just witnessed the Chinese version of the Boston Tea Party. July 4th is still a long way away for them. But as it does time and time again, freedom and liberty always win in the end.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Gray, hello, Pat.
Glenn.
How are you?
Oh, I'm almost perfect.
Really?
Yeah, very close.
That's great, because we have a lot of listeners that were very concerned about your health last week.
I know, it was really nice. And, you know, thanks to everybody for their thoughts and prayers. The surgery went really well. It helped a lot. Helped a lot.
Yeah.
Fact is,
you had
another two or three, probably.
Yeah, so you had four vertebrae fused together?
Yeah, I had, I'm not sure all the things he did, but it was a discectomy and fusion. Yeah, so
okay,
they take out discs that are pinching nerves, and then they put in a plate and screws and jam it all down there somehow. I don't know how that works.
Is it just me, or are you the luckiest man on the earth today? I just thought I heard a little echo there as you were talking about your health. So it's good to have you back, Pat. And
thank you.
And,
good to be back.
How was your weekend? Your Independence Day.
It was pretty quiet. Well, until our entire church showed up. We hosted the ward 4th of July party. And that was, 5 days after my surgery. So it was really quiet until, 120 people showed up at my house.
Mm,
yeah.
Okay.
And it was,
that's really nice. You know, there's nothing better. There's really nothing better than having 120 people show up to your house right after surgery.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. And that's what I told my wife. This is the best thing you could have done right now. This is great. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right. My wife was so pissed at me because we were leaving to go to New York on July 5th in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I had suggested that, you know, maybe, you know, we have the family over and a couple of friends. And it didn't go well with my wife. It didn't go well.
She was I'll bet it didn't.
She was like, okay. And then what? I could stay up all night and pack. And I'm like, well, I guess. I mean, if that's what you want to do.
It's up to you.
Yeah, it's up
maybe
to
you. Maybe you can plan ahead a little bit.
Yeah. So I was. I went to, so we're traveling to New York, which is always delightful.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to New York. And I'm here in New York for, not kidding, could not have been longer than 5 minutes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy comes up and to me in the airport, and he's like, how come you're supporting Donald Trump? How could you possibly do that? And I'm like, I don't know if you listen to the show, but that's not usually the complaint I get.
Right.
He said, you're supporting a dictator. And I said, well, thank you very much. I appreciate meeting you. It's been very nice. And he says, you know, eat crap. He didn't use the word crap.
Oh.
And then he walked away. And I thought,
okay,
he may work for the Board of Tourism for New York. You know, that may be the greeting that everybody gets when you land in New York. So it was,
wow.
You know, it was very nice.
Yes.
I'm taking my daughters out because I started a tradition, as you know, Pat, when they were very little. I would take them to a Broadway show, mm-hmm. each of them, and I would take them out on a father-daughter date. And guys, don't be careful when you are starting traditions because they never end, apparently. So they said to me when they were like six or seven that they wanted me to get all dressed up and wear a black tie. And so
which is what people don't do anymore. Yeah.
I mean, back in the 80s, when you went mm-hmm. to a Broadway show, you know, you could wear a black tie because there was on a Friday or a Saturday night, a lot of people wore a black tie,
right?
Going to a Broadway show. Nobody does now, okay? If mm-hmm. I think as long as you're wearing just underpants, I think
yeah,
you're okay.
That's about enough.
Yeah, that's
it
about
seriously
enough.
Is. When you see them lined up outside the theater, and we used to all the time, it's like you're going to a cinema. It's not a dress-up thing anymore.
Yeah, so it's not. And so it's I feel very out of place. Usually I'm asked, you know, where can you help me to my seat? And I'm like, no. But I noticed this year, not even the ushers are wearing ties.
Oh, okay. Man.
Nobody Jeez. Is wearing a tie, let alone a black tie. So Saturday I went out with my granddaughter because it somehow or another has now slipped into the next generation.
Wow.
That grandpa gets to do that. And it was about, oh, I don't know, 1,000 degrees, 1,000% humidity, and it smells delightful here. And I kept thinking to myself, you know, I love New York, just doesn't say what's in my heart, you know? It just, I don't know if you could print a t-shirt, what's in my heart, but it just doesn't really say it all. So, gentlemen, just remember, anything you start with your daughters, you have to finish, and that ends at your death. But I'd let you know.
It's a happy thought. Yeah,
thank you.
Obviously, you're enjoying it, loving it, going into the second and third generation now.
Yeah. Now, so I have 5 nights that I have to.
Yeah.
I have Cheyenne and Hannah and
right.
Lorelai. And Mary, and then my wife, and then my daughter is performing at Carnegie Hall on Friday.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, who'd have guessed
wow.
that a Beck is at Carnegie Hall? But so I'm going to that. So every night I get to wear a tuxedo. It just doesn't get
Does
any
that
better.
Have to remain part of the tradition, or couldn't you go in a pair of jeans?
I asked.
Oh, really?
I asked.
Yeah, I would.
And then
too.
I got the. Oh.
Oh.
Well,
I guess you could. If you wanted to completely ruin the night.
If that's what you want to do. I mean, oh, okay. Well, no, Dad, it's not a problem. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just brought with me, like, you know, a really nice, it doesn't really go with a suit. Okay, well, it could. Have you seen everybody else dressed? I mean, you know, they're not even wearing shoes. They're not wearing shoes anymore. So, and then we went to Frozen, which I can't take the amount of diversity. Okay, I just, mm-hmm. I can't take it. I mean, it's one thing to be colorblind and okay, whatever. But there's another thing about a story that happens in, I don't know, Scandinavia.
Uh-huh.
All right. The king's not black in Scandinavia, especially if he has two very white daughters. It's just not happening. Why? What is it with all the Olaf was a girl. Yeah, Olaf was a girl. The king was black. There was something else that was.
Well, doesn't
I think it was? I think it was just that I kept thinking that they were going to have what's her name that sings "Let It Go" come out. You know, because they're talking now about the next movie that she's going to come out as gay, as lesbian, and I'm like, I just can't take it.
So have they already established that if Olaf is a girl? Because isn't Olaf the romantic interest of one of the two like girls, right, in the kingdom? The two princesses?
The romantic
interest.
No, Olaf is the snowman.
Oh, okay. I was thinking Olaf. Who's the guy then? The, you know, the burly,
the reindeer?
Yeah, the reindeer guy.
Reindeer guy.
Okay, yeah, that's
yeah,
not
the
Olaf.
Reindeer guy. I don't remember
it's
his
It's been a while
name.
Since I've seen Frozen.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. He was black, which made me think, she's marrying her dad, you know. All
right.
Girls want
right.
to marry their dad, so she's marrying her dad. Maybe that was it.
It is Disney amazing is, how far they've bent over backward for in the name of diversity. It has to be whether it works or not. You know,
right.
they have to change everything.
No, doesn't matter.
Right,
and it really doesn't matter if you were watching something else where. You know, it wasn't set in Scandinavia.
Right.
Why is it set in Scandinavia? Then with Mary, I went to see another show where they were doing the Four Tops and, I don't know, the OJs or somebody on it. It was the Carole King show. And they were all black. And I was like, why isn't the lead singer white?
Right.
Or Asian?
Right.
Why? No Asians in this play? The Four Tops. You can't have an Asian. Okay, I get it. Racists.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Hey, I've never done this before. I don't think ever. Where I have so badly botched a commercial, I will feel guilty the rest of the day if I don't correct this. Tecovas is a new sponsor today. I just did their commercial and it was awful. And it was because I was time pressed and it was new. And I like to spend more time with a new sponsor. This is a boot company, but it's better than a boot company. It makes jeans, it makes belts, leatherware, wallets, everything. They are based in Texas, and it's a couple of guys that started this that were like, just like me, and I think, Pat, when you got down here, I mean, boots are so expensive.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know who wears the $2,000 boots, I guess, you know.
Well, they can go up to 10.
Oh, I know they can.
Yeah.
I know they can.
Or more.
And they, you know, who wears those? I don't know where you wear them. Or, I mean,
getting outside of the limousine.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where you, you would wear those, but people do wear them in Texas. But the average person, you're either buying really bad stuff, or you're having to be, you know, forced into something that you just can't afford. These people make really good handmade boots, and I wanted to apologize to them for such a horrible commercial and welcome them to the family. I wear their jeans. I wear their boots. I think I'm wearing their belt today. And this is a client that I wanted on the air because I think they're really, really good. Again, started by two guys who just think Americans can do really great quality and find ways to make it affordable for everybody. So it's TECOVAS, tecovas.com/Beck. All right, Pat, the question that I have to ask that I think the New York Times is really reflecting most Americans when they ask this question. Do Americans need air conditioning?
If they want to survive, yeah. If you live in Texas, you know the answer to that question.
Yeah, well, you live anywhere in the South. There's a reason why the South was sparsely populated for a long time.
Right.
Because there was no air conditioning.
Eight people lived in Houston, Texas until about 1956.
Yeah, nobody did. Right. Nobody did. You wouldn't. Yeah. I was out this summer in Texas. Where was I? And I was only outside for maybe an hour and a half. And I was, who lived here?
Yeah.
Nobody lived here.
It's nuts.
And it was the same way pretty much all over the South. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and I got news for you. Pacific Northwest, we could have done without air conditioning. I did my whole life growing up. And yes, there were a few sleepless nights where you needed a fan in the summertime that were really toss and turn that you could have used air conditioning. For the most part, you open a window. There are not even flies in the Pacific Northwest, for the love of Pete.
It's like that in Montana, too. Nobody has air conditioning in Montana. Nobody
has it. Nobody.
Now, in New York, it's a different story, and that's, you know, that's pretty far north, too. But you get those hot, humid days. You can't do without air conditioning, even in New York. So it's not just a southern thing. But if you, I mean, if you live in Iceland, yeah, you're going to say, okay, yeah, I don't need air conditioning.
And try Africa.
Right.
Try Africa. Right. Okay. So, but the New York Times would like to say, on an overheated planet, air conditioning becomes more and more desirable. Solving the short-term problem it's helped create. So air conditioning is the reason why the planet is getting hotter, and the more we use air conditioning, the hotter it's going to get. Fire, they say, made us human. But does air conditioning make us less so?
No.
No.
No. Makes us much more so.
Yeah.
When we can control both environments, are you kidding me? Didn't that say something about a species?
Yeah, I don't think monkeys control the environment.
I don't think so.
I'm trying to check out the lion who was like, hey, I got to call the air conditioning guy. I'm wearing this fur coat around my neck the whole time, and I'm boiling up. I need to call the air conditioning lion. Now, they go on. Think about the term air conditioning.
Okay.
Says the culture critic at the Boston Globe, who suffers at work and does without at home. Do you really want to condition your air?
Yes.
Yes, I do. Your skin, maybe, or your hair. I'm a vegetarian, but I didn't become one for any specific reason. It just happened. But there are all sorts of ex post facto good reasons for not eating meat. Same with AC. If you just modify your actions, it's good for the planet. It's good for everyone. Oh, shut up. You know why? There is no good reason to get rid of air conditioning. I was just last night, we were in Chinatown. Whew, have you smelled Chinatown in the summer in New York? You get the nice,
lovely
urine, vomit, you know, smell coming up from the subway.
Nice.
Right into the dead, stinky fish.
Mm.
Oh, my gosh.
There dinner bell is ringing now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it was, I mean, I could have been confused for a bulimic yesterday. I was so close to barfing the whole time I was in. But I managed to get through it by going into a nice air-conditioned restaurant and eating stuff that didn't smell like it was rotting next to a bunch of people who didn't smell like bad BO. No, I don't want to live that way. We've made progress. The New York Times would like to let us know that overcooling is using conventional AC to its extreme, and it's like extreme dieting, removing calories without improving nutrition. One ends up installing heaters in the summer in office spaces that do not enable local temperature control, the quintessential sugar rush. Air conditioning, listen to this, air conditioning demystifies nature's miracles.
What?
What? What is one of nature's miracles? That it's boiling hot outside? That's not a nature
miracle.
I'm not mystified by it. It's summer. It's summer. I live in a part that's closest to the equator, which is then getting directly the direct sunlight from the sun, that big flaming nuclear explosion in the sky. I don't know how mystical it really is. It contributes to a culture characterized by disconnection and overconsumption. What are we, disconnected from what? The heat? Disconnected from smelly people? Yes. There's an off-sited study published in Nature.com that notes how building temperatures once set to comfort preferences of the 1960s era men in suits disregard the thermal comfort of the female staffers. Quote, air conditioning is sexist, an engine of the patriarchy. This is the frickin' New York Times. Building temperatures are largely controlled by building managers to industry standards that aim for the thermal comfort of 80% of a building's occupant, which means, of course, that 20% will be uncomfortable, if not miserable. Those standards are updated regularly by the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers, which suggests that a building temperature range from 67 to 82 degrees Fahrenheit. What building except your mother's or your grandparents' house is at 82 degrees? I mean, that's a nursing home.
Yeah.
That's the only place is a nursing. My father-in-law comes down and he's had a stroke and he's got, I don't know, thin blood or what. I don't know what it is, but he comes down. He's literally wearing a sweater and a jacket outside in Dallas in the summer. He can't come and visit us anymore. I told Tanya, he's got to stay at a hotel. So he's got to stay, or he can just live in a tent outside, and we can put some hot coals on the floor for him, too. But he keeps it like at 85 degrees. It's miserable. Many offices, including those in the New York Times, set their thermostats to 74 to 76 degrees, which you would think would feel balmy. Yet the other day, my colleagues were shivering in sweatshirts and sweaters. Okay.
What?
Between 74 and 76 degrees,
no, you're not shivering.
They're shivering in sweatshirts and sweaters.
No.
My colleagues, probably about 20% of them, were shivering. Oh, kind of like what the industry standard is, that it's set for 80%, meaning that 20% are going to be uncomfortable, in some cases even miserable? What are you talking about? You're within the norm, New York Times. But I guess suffering, self-imposed suffering in my life because I'm a lapsed Catholic and an Irishman. So I need a certain degree of self-imposed suffering in my life. And I guess this air conditioning is just one that qualifies as suffering. Oh, my God.
Pathetic.
They are They are right in step with American people. Yeah. Do you remember how they made fun of Jimmy Carter when he said, you know, about sweaters? You just have to wear a sweater. Just set your air conditioner a little lower and wear a sweater in the in the winter.
Yeah.
We're back to this.
Yeah, that's when we were being blamed for the energy crisis.
Yes. Now we're being blamed for global warming, and it's the same message.
Jeez.
Have less. Do less. Don't have. I am currently sitting in a studio in Manhattan that is 62 degrees, and I'm loving every second of it. And if there's somewhere on Earth a panda going, oh, it's too hot. Well, sucks to be a panda. Mm-hmm. I like it 62 degrees in the summer.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Let's start with Starbucks. Starbucks, if you remember right, they took the side of two people that were staying at the Starbucks, sitting at the table and not ordering anything, and it was crowded. And if I remember right, they said, you have to order. They said no, so the manager called police. Police came, removed them because then they started getting hostile. And then Starbucks turned against the police, who they called.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Now they've done it again in Arizona.
Yeah, some Tempe police officers were forced to pick up their coffee cups and get out of the restaurant because one person in the Starbucks went to an employee and said, I don't feel safe.
I don't feel safe because there's police officers in here.
I mean, wouldn't the natural reaction, wouldn't that be your natural reaction? Are you wanted by the law? What's your problem?
Quite honestly, unless you're mentally ill.
That could be, yes.
Okay,
yes.
If you're mentally ill.
Barring that, though, you've got no business doing this.
If you are living in, I don't know, you know, some southern town that just has not gotten past 1956, and you're black, you're white,
that's not Tempe,
and you
though.
Like black people.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Tempe.
No.
So you have to be so delusional and suffering from some sort of mental illness to think that you're unsafe with the cops in a public place. That doesn't make any sense.
And you know, it's just the hysteria of guns. They probably see the guns that the officers have in their holsters, and they freak out.
Do you think so? I think
it
could just as easily
be
just the badge.
Or it might be.
Just the badge. There, I mean, we've made police officers into such bad guys, especially on Tempe. Isn't that where the university is located?
Mm-hmm. One of them.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's got. I bet it's a university student that is just like.
Could well be.
This isn't a safe space.
Yes. Yes. And so you're throwing police officers out because the customers don't feel safe. All right. Well, then when the place gets held up, or somebody comes in and starts shooting, then what do you do? Well, we don't want police officers in here because we won't feel safe.
Well, police officers will be what police officers are, and they will respond.
Every time. Yes, they
every
will.
Every time.
Yes.
For me, I would have a very hard time. I would not be a good police officer.
I wouldn't either. Good luck.
Because there would come a time to where I'd be like, shut up.
Right.
Just shut up.
One out of 12, a 211 in progress in Tempe. And
no,
yeah, I'm not doing it.
Call one out of 13 because 12 ain't answering this call. I would really,
that is how you would feel. That's how I would feel.
And I would too.
You know, it's amazing police don't do that,
especially because they're risking their lives. When you need them, you love them. You remember how we all felt about every single police officer in the country after 9/11. We couldn't get enough of these guys. We loved them. Now these same guys who showed us that when the going gets tough, they run in the building while we're running out of the building. Now, those guys, oh, they're just oppressors. They're horrible.
Mm-hmm.
This is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. It is. We've taken and blown everything out of proportion. We have taken every good quality and assigned it to one group of people, and every bad quality and assigned it to another group of people. This is what gets people killed. This is what happens with racism or classism, that you start to put everybody into the same category. Well, they're not. There's some really good rich people. There's some really good white people. There are some really good black people. There are some really good poor people. There are some really good Chinese people, some really bad Chinese people. What are you talking about? There's everything, because we're all human. And when it all comes down to it, all of us are going to the same place. Well, not all of us are going to the same place. If you believe in hell, I don't happen to believe in hell, but if you believe in hell, it does make you feel good that not everybody's going to the same place. Anyway, the idea that we somehow or another are different from each other, when I mean as a group, is ridiculous. Because they make us all exactly the same as a group, and yet they're at the same time telling us to celebrate our differences. Well, wait a minute. I thought we were all the same as a group. How does this even work? None of this even makes sense anymore. You used to be able to have it make some sort of sense. It doesn't. It doesn't make sense. Maybe it's just me.
I don't think so. It's 2019. That's kind of where we wind up every day on my show. It's 2019. The things that are everyday occurrences now, I couldn't have envisioned 5 years ago. And I remember 5 years ago thinking, well, we've come a long way down the wrong road. And look how much further we've traveled down that road than we were 5 years ago. And it gets worse every day. It just keeps compiling. It's nuts.
Have you read, and I know I've talked about this for a long time, but you were glad when you read Garden of the Beasts, if I remember right.
Yes.
Once you read
yes.
it, you were happy you did.
Yes.
You have to read, it's not Avoiding Hitler. It's Defying Hitler. Defying Hitler. It is, Pat, I'm telling you, you will read it and you will see the exact pattern. You know, our museum was all about patterns.
Yeah.
And the only reason to look at history is to recognize it for the patterns and say, okay, here's how it happened last time. Are we making any of those mistakes? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at this book called Defying Hitler, and it just stops at the end, it doesn't have a satisfying ending, because it was just a manuscript or almost a diary.
Is this written in 1939?
Yes.
And not published until 2000, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it was written in Germany by a guy who became one of the leading authors and authorities on Hitler. He wrote the quintessential biography on Hitler. And so he came to the United States in 1939. He didn't think he was going to be able to get out of there. But he starts at just before World War I. And he shows how society had changed. And he started writing it in the 30s because he saw Hitler come to power. And he's writing a letter of warning to the West and saying, look, you guys don't understand what's happening in Germany. And how the German people are seeing this. They're not who you think they are anymore because of what's happened over the last 20 years. Now, we're 20 years after 9/11. And when you read that book, just make World War I our 9/11. And you will see the exact same pattern.
It's pretty chilling.
It's chilling. It's chilling.
Wow.
When I read this, I think I highlighted almost every page, because I would read a page and I'd be like, oh my gosh, the way he talks about people, because he's writing it like a diary. He's writing it almost real time. And he said, you know, my friends who we were close to just a year ago. Now we can't talk to each other. Now they'll call me a racist. They'll call me, you know, a communist. They'll call me all of these names. And you read it, it's exactly the same. Exactly the same. And the, again, the only reason to learn history is to make sure you don't create the same conditions and the same pattern and repeat the pattern. Otherwise, you're going to cut out the same exact figure. This is an important book for every American to read because it will show you we are going down the wrong path like crazy. And we'll get to an actual Nazi lover and AOC, her love for this Nazi lover. Hey, Pat, do you know, can you tell me, what do you know about Evita?
That she was a fascist. Right,
she was, she was a
fascist lover, and she was a fan of the Nazis, but also a fan of the people. I mean, she was all about the people, the suffering
of
the people, and knew that, you know, wealth was only in the hands of a small fraction, a tiny little fraction of the people of Argentina.
Right,
and she wanted to fix that. She wanted to fix.
And she. It was in even a smaller fraction. It was all in her hands in the end.
Yes.
But AOC tweeted this weekend, quote, "I had watched for many years and seen how a few rich families held much of Argentina's wealth and power in their hands. So the government brought in an 8-hour work day, sickness pay, and fair wages to give poor workers a fair go."
Man.
End quote. Vita Perón. I mean, how do you not know who this is?
I don't know.
Hitler said stuff like this. Be like, saying, "I'm going to build a road that has no speed limit. It's going to be called the Autobahn. And I'm going to start building some great cars called a Volkswagen." Adolf Hitler. Hello.
If you tweeted that out, it would be fascinating to see the deluge afterwards. But for her fans, they don't care because, you know, I think they're as ignorant as she is. They don't know who Eva Perón is. They don't know what she stood for. And I don't know that AOC knows much of anything, really. She's pretty butt stupid. And so it doesn't surprise me to see her tweet out quotes that seemingly she agrees with Eva Perón.
Okay, so wait a minute. It is Eva. I'm looking at the deal.
Well,
it
you
is
could,
Eva.
Or they
Why
called her Evita, too.
They did call her Evita.
It was, it's pretty much both terms.
Okay.
Both names.
All right. I like to call her just fascist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That works,
so,
too.
So, you know, she went over to Germany, you know, right around the war, if not in the war. And, you know, she's hobnobbing with the Nazis. And, you know, there's a reason... You know, Argentina ended up being a place where there was a lot of Nazis towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she made a very, very safe place for it. But she went over to tour and see all of the greatest dictators of her time during the war. And she also made a quick stop at a bank in Switzerland. And they were... The rumor is that she went over there and she just loaded that Swiss bank account with all kinds of, the people's money. Let's just say that. All kinds of cash from the people. But she was only saving it, I'm sure.
Yeah, for the little people. For the little people that she was so concerned about. You know that's what she was doing.
Right. Well, they'll say that she was great for women's suffrage and she was great for the poor. Can we just point out that when we point out that the founders did a lot of good stuff, including fighting against slavery, no, you can't. They were horrible human beings. But they can take Eva Perón, they can take Margaret Sanger, and they can say, those people are horrible individuals.
All they do is
horrible individuals.
Yeah. It's It's a nice double standard if you can get away with it. It's great because these are terrible people. And it's amazing that they get away with praising them and that suffer no consequences. I mean, you can't even say, Biden couldn't even say something that he ate dinner with two segregationists and get away with it. And he's been persecuted ever since.
He will again if he's made the nominee.
Yeah, he will.
Then he will again.
Then it'll be fine.
Then it'll be totally fine.
Yep.
Totally fine. I'm convinced. We haven't talked about the sex, what's his name, Epstein.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about him yet. We have to, because I'm convinced this is about Donald Trump. They haven't made it about him yet. I mean, some have. Because Trump made a statement a few years ago about, how he likes the ladies, how this guy likes the ladies, and he was a friend. And I really think this is about Donald Trump. I wonder if this guy should go to jail. It's really a horrible story. But I wonder if it's not a story today just for the setup of, you know, an October surprise for the election.
Mm-hmm. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So on Saturday, there was a plane that landed here in New York, and it had Jeffrey Epstein in it. And the police arrested him, and he has been in jail. He was taken to New York's public corruption unit, and they were assisted by investigators of the sex trafficking division. The case is still undisclosed. There are indications that others are involved in his crimes, and they are going to be charged or named as cooperating witnesses. This guy seems to be a real dirtbag. This is kind of like what's his name from Hollywood?
Weinstein.
Weinstein. Where everybody kind of knew this, but nobody ever said it out loud. Everybody in these circles have thought that he was a dirtbag for a long time. Mm-hmm. Good friends with Bill and Hillary Clinton. Clinton would go down to
Democrat donor.
Yeah, huge Democratic donor. And Bill Clinton would go down to his private island in the Virgin Islands. And this is where a lot of this stuff apparently happened, where he actually kept sex slaves. And they would go down and have their way with these women and rape them and then go home on his private jet.
Yeah, and in some cases they weren't women. They were underage girls, which makes this story even more sickening.
He apparently, and this according to an article done by, what was it? Like, maybe it might have even been Vanity Fair. They quoted Donald Trump saying, yeah, he likes his women and he likes them young. And they printed that. And now they're using that against Donald Trump. Donald Trump was neighbors with him down by Mar-a-Lago. The picture they have of Donald Trump and Epstein is one with the first lady, Melania.
Oh, Melania, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of Marla Maples, but Melania. And it was taken back in the 1980s. So they've known each other for a long time. But again, even the New York Times is saying that they were really close with the Clintons, and he was a very large Democratic donor. So they're going to try to make this, I think, all about Donald Trump.
I think you're exactly right on that. I was just reading an article on this, and it's talking about Epstein, a multimillionaire hedge fund manager who has powerful political connections that include, and you would assume the first person they mentioned would be Bill Clinton, because that's who's been associated with him for years now. And Clinton flew on his jet with him to the private island, and there's speculation that he was involved in some of these parties with young women. But no, the first person they include is President Donald Trump. Amazing. That's amazing.
Now, the Miami Herald is the one that is really has done all of the work on this, and they would not let it go. And I think that is, I think that's commendable. But I want you to listen to what they say about Donald Trump. They talk about how he has been with many, many famous people, blah, blah, blah. They say the Epstein case drew scrutiny following an investigation published in November by the Miami Herald called Perversion of Justice that examined the ways in which the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida, Alexander Acosta, worked in conjunction with Epstein's lawyers to engineer the non-prosecution agreement and to keep it secret from Epstein's victims so they could not object. Acosta is now President Trump's Secretary of Labor. So that's how they're going to get into Donald Trump, because they don't have anything really on Donald Trump on this that we know of. They do bring up the friendship with Bill and Hillary Clinton, because that's something that we've known for a very long time, that Bill and Robert Epstein would you know, go on trips to the private island from time to time. There's no information of Donald Trump being involved in any of that. It looks like they're just going to go after, see, look, he hired this guy who was doing shady things down in Florida. And I think that's really where this thing is going to end up in about a year from now. Now, some of the people that are either going to be prosecuted or used as cooperating witnesses, one of them is this woman named Maxwell. She's almost 60 years old. She's a British socialite. She was a woman working for Epstein, apparently as the madam. And according to court records, she was partners in this international modeling company. And what the scam was is she would approach these young girls and say, "Hey, do you want to be in a modeling company? We can help find jobs. You're beautiful. Blah blah blah. I want you to come to this modeling class and assignment, and we're going to help launch your modeling and fashion career and give you all kinds of educational opportunities." And then they would be flown down, and then someone would say, "If you don't have sex with him and all of his buddies, he's going to destroy your modeling career. You won't have a chance at anything, because do you know who he is? I mean, he's in there with the former president of the United States, Bill Clinton. You can't say no to these people. They'll destroy you." And then they had them. That's in a nutshell what they think is going on. If she turns, because she's going to face prison for a very long time if they have evidence against her, they think that she's going to be named as a cooperating witness. And if she is cooperating and admits to all this, he'll go to jail for the rest of his life, and others may also go to jail for the rest of their life, which would be a very, very good thing.
Yeah,
as long as it's honest.
I don't think they've even scratched the surface of who's been involved with this either. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are probably pretty nervous right now because he got rearrested. They were probably thinking this was over. They settled this case. He paid off a bunch of people. I'm in the clear. And now he's been arrested again. So, yeah, they're going to get caught.
I think this was the biggest travesty of justice I've seen in
a long time.
In a long, long time. I mean, I can't think of another. Well, O.J. Simpson comes to mind. But this one was corrupt from the get-go. I mean, the guy who's working for Trump now should be investigated, not because of any connections with Trump, but because this was just dirty. It was clearly dirty. The police, that were involved said they'd never seen anything like this before. It was this shady deal that was supposed to keep him out of court for all of the sex stuff.
Right.
So I don't know. He's supposed to go to a judge today, and they're saying that he may not leave jail. He may not be able to post bail because he's considered a flight risk. And I would imagine a guy with that kind of money.
Yeah, a billionaire.
I mean,
he is a flight risk.
That is a total flight. I mean, that is the definition of a flight risk. That guy could board a plane in the middle of the night, especially with all of his political connections. And I mean, if he really does have connections to the royal family and Bill Clinton and people in the Trump administration, the guy could get out of the United States probably fairly easy. So we'll see. We'll bring an update on this tomorrow after we find out exactly what is happening. Also, are we headed for the end of the world? Oh my gosh. I read this review of this book that talks about the end of the world and what's bringing it apart. And Pat, do you remember what they said about the Overton window?
Oh yeah.
You remember the review and Agenda 21? It was just all this conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it was just nothing. It wasn't a novel. It was Glenn Beck's conspiracy theories, even though all of our stuff in those were footnoted. So you knew exactly what was real and what wasn't. I mean, you read the Eye of Moloch. Well, that's pretty much the NSA and Google. That's what that book was about before that book knew what they were going to be called. This one, The Wanderers, they're headed toward the end of the world. And I want to share some of this because it seems so plausible and is definitely not a conspiracy theorist book or really anything that was politically motivated at all.
That's just people calling up. It like it is. That's all this
That's
is.
What it is. That's all calling this is. It like it is.
Okay,
and
good.
Pat, it's fiction.
Sure.
It's fiction.
Sure. You can't persecute them for fiction.
No.
Why would
no.
you?
Of course not.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.